Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-size enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome to our listeners. We're here at MetLife Stadium with the CFO Studio, which is an event taking place out at MetLife Stadium today, the home of where the Jets and the Giants play. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Wise. This is Manufacturing Talk Radio. Lou, how are you doing?
I'm doing great and really learning a lot about the CFO world and also football. I've never been to MetLife Stadium.
So we're going to have dinner in the 50-yard line tonight.
I hear that.
You'll know what a 50-yard line is.
Yeah, the stadium doesn't really look all that big from the 50-yard line. I took a walk out there.
Yeah, it's surprising. You know, we have had several shows, Lou, and we've talked to folks who talked about onshoring, reshoring, and nearshoring, and offshoring.
Shoring.
Yeah, we've had a... What we haven't had, and this is going to be fun, we haven't had somebody on the show who never took it offshore in the first place. In other words, you can still manufacture in the United States, folks, put a fine product together and be competitively priced without having to source it all over the world. We have Chuck Eapen with us today. Chuck, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And can you be profitable?
You better believe it.
Okay.
Chuck, give us a quick idea of the company you're with now, and then I want to talk about the fact that you didn't offshore to begin with, because this is a fascinating story.
Sure. So maybe I should start by saying, first of all, that the business that that I'm involved with now is primarily geared towards the professional development of chief executives and business owners from a faith-based perspective. And that organization that I'm with today is called the C-12 Group, or America's largest professional development corporation, single-mindedly focused on the CEO of an entity. Most of our client base serves businesses in revenues from a few million dollars privately held to well over a couple of billion publicly traded. But that's what I do today. To get me to here, though, I actually grew up in the electronics manufacturing and telecommunications world, which, as you both know, is highly competitive.
Sure.
And when it comes to process efficiencies, we do set the standard for that, by which automotive follows, medical device equipment manufacturers follow.
Mm-hmm.
So we really were at the forefront of looking at this whole manufacturing, problem. How do you actually produce a product profitably from a perspective of high-grade, best-in-class quality, while still managing to maintain cost containment and not getting the cost of sales out of control? With your perspective, I'd like to talk a little bit about, I guess, maybe three areas that most manufacturers tend to gravitate towards when it comes to, hey, let's consider maybe offshoring something.
Mm-hmm.
And those three areas, for myself and for many other manufacturers, typically revolve around these. Number one, there's some type of a cost reduction imperative. They're basically trying to get their cost of sales down. The second is that there's some type of a process efficiency that they hope to gain as a result of offshoring, nearshoring, things of that nature. And then thirdly, there may or may not be some type of a competitive advantage by way of some kind of synergistic distribution channel, all right? So if you can somehow tap into those three areas, then the notion of doing some type of offshoring solution, and I use that with quotations, it's anything that involves manufacturing processes outside the United States, then offshoring, with that definition, potentially makes some sense. However, as an American manufacturer, we had our plants in San Diego, California. We sold to some of the largest telecommunications companies in the world, namely Nokia, Siemens, Alcatel, Lucent. I mean, you name it, we probably sold to them. In many ways, we were the telecommunications company's outsourced manufacturing partner because, frankly, if they could do it themselves, they would have. But they did not have either the cost containment or, these three areas that they could somehow leverage. So they came to us. Long story short, I did a fair amount of travels throughout the United States trying to see if there was a way to relocate a plant for those three areas. I did go overseas. We looked at maquiladoras in Tijuana, Mexico, which of course is right across the street from San Diego.
Right.
It made a lot of sense, potentially, on paper, that, hey, maybe there was something we could do. What we found, though, was that quite the opposite. At least for us, in that day and time, what we learned was that there were a lot of challenges. Number one, and I'll kind of go through my Pareto chart, if you will, and maybe your listening audience can identify with some of these too. Number one, the issue of the environment was a big issue for us. And by environment, I don't mean just the, you know, EPA type of stuff. I'm talking about government oversight, regulatory compliance issues, all right?
Okay.
We take a lot for granted here in the United States, and though everybody, you know, has their favorite opinion about the EPA and OSHA and all that other stuff, the reality is some of that governmental oversight does help to ensure a good quality product by taking care of people, maintaining their health, standards of work, you know, safety, those types of things. They do have value. You go somewhere else, those things aren't necessarily in place, or if they are, they're not well-defined.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes an issue in terms of cost containment and quality output. The second thing that we learned was that while we have a particular culture to our entity, that same culture, its core values, its mission statement, is not necessarily shared by that outsourced partner. So while we may value, for example, certain things regarding, you know, integrity, we have laws in the United States, the Foreign Anti-Corruption Act. You can't take bribes, for example, and call it a marketing expense, right? All right. Well, guess what? That my friends in China don't work that way. So trying to understand culturally what that fit is a real challenge. And for most American companies, even today, that still becomes quite an obstacle to overcome. It's not easy to deal with that.
What year were you doing this?
This enterprise,
Mexico.
Yeah, this was I would say from the early 1990s through the mid 2000s. So I would say probably within the last 8 to 10 years is when this was going.
Are you hearing that there are any changes happening down in Mexico now?
There are now. You heard, I'm sure, about the accidents that occurred in the South Asian peninsula with buildings collapsing and people dying in textile mills and factories and things like that. So there is definitely a change of foot, but here's the reality. Like most legislation and changes, they happen as a result of crisis. And so one of the things that you, if you have the stomach for it, you have to be prepared to walk through crisis events like that and still maintain a corporation producing good quality product, taking care of your customers, and now you've got to deal with that. Again, if you have the stomach for it, that's fine.
We hear that the aerospace industry out of California is heading south of the border. Obviously there's high quality, and what I understand is that there are a lot of American management is now moving there to supervise and overview what goes on in Mexican manufacturing. As a matter of fact, I think they just had a show in San Diego called Mexico Aerospace, they're looking to bring more of that business down there. So I think there probably have been some significant changes going on in Mexico.
I think that in general, depending on the complexity of the manufacturing operation, yes. I mean, clearly Mexico has been the hotbed for what we called simple electronics.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was basically some wire jockeying, manual laboring with soldering and things of that nature, that was the first foray for Mexican electronics manufacturing. Then came the robots, which tried to improve the issues of product reliability and repeatability. And that made a big milestone and a change. It particularly, and that was heralded primarily by the cell phone manufacturers. Mm-hmm. They wanted to find a way to produce essentially a commodity for dirt cheap. Okay. Now, the fact that aerospace is going down there, I think that's wonderful if they can continue to maintain good quality control and oversight. But again, let me just back up on something here. Those three points about the environment being a big consideration, right? The governmental oversight is a big deal. We do not have the same kind of laws to protect industry, the workers and such. If you compare the United States to Mexico, even today.
For sure.
So that has not really changed. The second item has a lot to do with the organizational health and the shared values, the mission, the culture, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
When something goes wrong with our customer base here, we are very quick to, you know, jump on the wagon, figure out what happened, assign a project team, get the deliverables, get a deadline, get it solved, right?
Mm-hmm.
That culture is a little different, admittedly, even between Western countries, between the United States and, say, for example, Western Europe. The same perspective isn't shared. And then finally, there's this issue of continuous improvement. It's proximity that makes for process improvements. Again, if those three things can be addressed adequately, you know, perhaps an offshoring, nearshoring, you know, model makes
mm-hmm.
sense. But for us, we found that when we looked at those constraints, it just didn't work.
Well, that's exciting that an American manufacturer came to the conclusion that they didn't have to offshore, they didn't have to nearshore, they could still do it here, they could still do it competitively. And Chuck, we appreciate having you on the show to share that message, because I think that's a direction that a lot of manufacturers need to be looking and understand that, you know, there's somebody out there who did it. It does still work here in America.
Yes, yes. You know, the irony is that even the Japanese auto manufacturers, Subaru, they still have plants in Indiana, so
mm-hmm.
we must be doing something right.
And you're exactly right, Lou. You brought that up recently, and Lou and I were just chatting, and Lou said, you know, that the Japanese auto manufacturers imported cars here for years, and then they started building plants here, and now the plants are almost disassociated with Japan management style, their American management style.
There you go.
Still works. Chuck, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate you being here at Manufacturing Talk Radio at this event at CFO Studio in MetLife Stadium. Thank you.
Lou, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back with Manufacturing Talk Radio after this brief commercial break.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
All right, thank you.
All Metals and Forge Group manufactures open die forgings in blocks, hubs, shafts, flanges, cylinders, gear blanks, and custom forge shapes, including seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, nickel alloys, copper and titanium for parts and assemblies in aerospace, oil and gas exploration, defense, machinery, transportation, shipbuilding, energy and power, pulp and paper, and many other industries. Visit steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment, components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials? 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification, fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason ThomasNet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to ThomasNet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We are back. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Weiss. Lou's company, All Metals and Forge Group, is the sponsor of Manufacturing Talk Radio. Lou, we appreciate that over all the years.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
It's been fun to do the show, and it's also nice to have a sponsor of the show, or we would be in terrible trouble. We are talking to you folks from CFO Studio, which is hosting an event out at MetLife Stadium in Secaucus, New Jersey, where the Jets and the Giants play football on Sunday in the NFL. And we have with us Mark Bednarz. Mark is a CPA, CISA, CFE. I'm going to let him explain all that from O'Connor Davies. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. CPA, obviously, Certified Public Accountant. CISA is Certified Information Systems Auditor, and CFE is Certified Fraud Examiner. So I have a healthy mix of both business and IT experience.
Now, Mark, O'Connor Davies, what does the firm do, and what's your focus?
Yeah, so we're the 30th largest accounting firm, and we offer accounting, tax, and advisory services. So my focus as being a partner in the group, I focus on risk management, business process reengineering, IT services. So those are some of the key areas that I focus on.
Now, it's interesting to me that, you know, your CPA firm used to just do your taxes. Now they look much deeper into your organization to try to help you gain efficiencies as you're rolling through the year. They're not just with you from January to April 15th. Is that right?
You're absolutely right. You know, the idea here is to be more of a trusted advisor for your clients, right? Because there's a lot of risks out there. There's a lot of compliance requirements, accounting changes, business changes all the time.
And what kind of risks are you seeing out there as you work with your clients that maybe they're not aware of, that they should be aware of, whether they're in manufacturing or some other business?
Yeah, so the two top risks that are the big buzzwords now are cybersecurity or cyber attacks and third-party risk management. I'll start off with the second one, third-party risk management. You know, a lot of organizations, especially manufacturing, are looking to outsource certain functions to third parties, either for cost savings and to also focus on some of their core competencies. So
okay.
That's big areas.
Okay.
And then on regards to cybersecurity, everybody's vulnerable to a cyber attack. So what do organizations have in place to ensure that they have the right governance in place, the right response? And the biggest thing right now is the employees. Employees are now going to different websites, and these are concerns that organizations have, because as they go to certain websites, they may be prone with malicious software out there that might get into your corporate environment. And especially with organizations going internationally now and servicing all these clients and dealing with your suppliers, you want to make sure you have the right securities in place.
Now, I know that we've had a show on cybersecurity, and we're probably going to have another show on cybersecurity. It's an important topic, and the reason it is that the small and mid-sized manufacturers are the ones that are probably the most vulnerable. The big guys are on top of it, and they've got, you know, the systems in place and the processes in place, and the small and mid-sized guys probably are saying to themselves, we're not that big a risk. But in fact, they're one of the biggest targets, are they not?
Absolutely. Because if your door is open, people are going to come on in. And what I'm referring to, whether it's, your firewalls are not properly protected, your employees are not properly trained to understand what to open, what not to open, really opens the door. And basically, there's people out there just casting a large web, almost like what they call dynamite fishing, where they'll throw it out there and see who's going to get tagged.
I'm not so sure that the large corporations really are on top of their cybersecurity. With all the credit card companies. And,
some of them have been hit, that's for sure.
Walmarts and Sony and so on. So we could tell you stories of recently at a show that we were at where there was hacking going on with the internet connection at the show that we were at. And it was presented by a cybersecurity company, and they were hacked. So much for security.
And a lot of times it's not actually internal, it's actually external. You're your outsourced provider. So two New Jersey universities just got hit by a denial of service attack. And so these are big universities, and again, they're utilizing a third party. Now, their security is not as good as the universities in this case. They are prone to its attack as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating how some of these people get into the systems. Lou and I were doing a show where we had the example given to us that they got into this one company through their third-party management of their HVAC, their air conditioning and heating and ventilation system software. They found a weakness to that. They penetrated that, got from that server into the corporate server, and then did their dastardly deeds from there. So
absolutely,
they could come to you from any possible direction.
Absolutely. Again, today, also people are also concerned about intellectual property. And you want to make sure your servers are properly secured to make sure nobody steals your intellectual property.
And is that a concern that you're seeing in all market verticals, from the smallest guy up to the largest corporation, that their IP is in fact very vulnerable?
Absolutely. We're seeing from the small companies to the large organizations. Obviously, the larger the organization, the more complex it is. So again, that's why we're seeing a lot of smaller manufacturing firms, companies going and getting the cybersecurity governance programs in place and doing vulnerability assessments and having somebody do that for them, to saying, let's just do a health check of our IT systems. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but it gives you a good understanding, the reaction time, and the vulnerabilities that exist in your organization.
One of the things that we discovered on our own by the show that we did do for cybersecurity, and the name of the show was Cybersecurity, Is It Possible? And by the end of the show, for me anyway, I determined that cybersecurity is not possible, because as soon as you think you're covered and you're taken care of, things have moved on, hackers have moved on, they've learned a new way, and it's something that companies have to be continually monitoring, changing, and improving. Even the small companies, you cannot believe that you are safe.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what we tell a lot of our smaller clients is, it's not about carpet bombing and having all the address all types of risks that may, security risks. It's all focused about doing a risk assessment, seeing what are some of your bigger vulnerabilities, and addressing that. And it's not an annual event. It's something that should be happening constantly throughout time. So you evaluate and you share that information across the industry as well, and see what some of your competitors are doing as well in this space.
Now, Mark, for the moment, if I'm the company owner and you're the CPA coming in to try to talk to me about cybersecurity, my comment back to you, and I'm sure you've heard it, is, Mark, this isn't making me any money. Why do I need to invest in this cybersecurity stuff?
Yeah, well, absolutely. It may not be making you money, but we're looking here from a cost savings perspective. You know, if you are vulnerable and you are attacked, it may take down your network, which may cause you to lose business. Your reputation is also at stake. These are two key areas. Even though they tend to be a little bit soft, one, reputational relates to be more of a soft cost, whether, like in the case of the two universities, denial service. How long are you going to be down and not servicing your clients? And if your clients mm-hmm. aren't happy and not being serviced, they may be going to a competitor.
So the next issue that popped into my head, if I'm the client and you've convinced me that, okay, now I need to do cybersecurity, do I look to O'Connor Davies to help me find what kind of software I should use and what kind of company I should use?
Absolutely. Well, first things first, we always say, let's develop a cybersecurity governance framework. That's going to be the glue that keeps everything together. Like we were just talking about, it's not a one-time event.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that we would do is, once we develop the governance structure, the response, perform a risk assessment that you guys are going to constantly update, the next thing is we talk about tools. And we want to make sure that you have the right tools in place, so there's triggers, alerts, people reviewing logs. These are key things that you need to address as soon as you see a potential event. And then obviously doing a vulnerability assessment, which is a great health check to see, do you have the right software in place, and whether you have ports that are open that shouldn't be. These are all things that are critical in developing the entire program for everything to work.
Okay, and now if I'm sitting here and I've got that in place, but I take a hit anyways, because as Lou said, it's nothing bulletproof. So I take a hit, and I've had a cyber attack. Is there in the plan how I recover?
Absolutely. So knowing your IT department, they will know exactly what type of data has been touched. They'll also know how to respond to each specific issue and close the loop. And if it should happen again, you're actually going back and doing more forensic work and saying, okay, I patched something. Was that exactly where they hit me again? So you're also learning through this entire process, and you should be sharing it within the industry, this information, with your partners so they can make these changes as well.
Well, Mark, I'm a 25-man machine shop, and I don't have the luxury of having an IT department. I have my partner's 18-year-old grandson who fills in as IT based on the new software we put in and all of the new securities. I have a different issue because we can't stay on top of things to the same degree Sony might, and they're probably still fixing the last mess up that they went through. So how do we deal with that for the smaller companies, the 25 to 50-man companies?
Sure. Where there's products out there and services such as what they call security as a service.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually utilize other organizations to monitor everything for you.
Ah, very interesting. Like an ASP?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's the first time we've heard security as a service. That's a great term.
Yeah, SaaS, right? You see software as a service, now security as a service, backup as a service. So a lot of organizations that we see are looking to save costs and utilize specialists in those industries.
Yes, as Lou said, you certainly can, as a small or even mid-sized business, afford to hire this whole group of people that you need, and you're not sure when you hired them, do you have the right expertise in place? And, oh, by the way, the technology just changed, and you need to fire the guys you hired and go find some new ones. So, very, very challenging. Mark, if someone wants to get a hold of your company, where do they go? What's your website address?
Yeah, so it's www.oconnordavies.com. ODPKF.com.
Okay, great. We certainly appreciated having you on the show and talking about these really important issues. You're here at CFO Studio out at MetLife Stadium to learn a little, to share a little, and we thank you for being on Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That will wrap us up today for Manufacturing Talk Radio. We'll be back next week with our show on each Tuesday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.